Hello, everyone, and welcome to this still tentatively untitled Hustleball podcast. I'm Chris Manning, a contributor here with Editor-in-Chief Alex Alvarado and Caleb Carter. Guys, it's a Sunday. How are you doing today?
More coffee, please.
Yes.
Had my fair share of biscuits and orange juice, but yeah, coffee sounds pretty good still.
Coffee.
Oh, yeah, your mom made breakfast. How was that?
Yeah. Fitting the ideal of the blogger who lives with his parents still, kind of, so yeah.
Blogging doesn't pay the bills as well as it probably should. SB Nation, talking to you. Just so you guys know, this is not a Hustle Belt is Biased Towards Ohio podcast. We just, Caleb and I and Alex just talked about wanting to do something like this, and you might see more of this in the future, we'll see. But OU had a very, let's go up and down football season this year. I finished 8-5, lost in the Camilla Bowl to Appalachian State on a last-second field goal. It was a really, really good game. I don't know if either both of you watched it or not, but it was nuts. I thought it was nuts, at least.
I watched 0% of it, actually. I was actually, like, swimming a lot, but I somewhat kept up on my phone. Like, you guys were up, like, double digits, and then, like, how did it all break apart?
The quick recap is they got up after literally getting no offense. Javon Johnson and Quentin Poling basically just, I think, combined scored, 15 points out of Ohio's 29. Or something like that. I might be wrong. It's been like 2 weeks. And then Appalachian State just got big plays. A lot of the second half just kind of took advantage of an Ohio defense that looked a little bit tired and just, was breaks a little bit at times. And then they drove down the field after Ohio got stopped on the 3-yard line on 4th-and-1, kicked the go-ahead field goal, and then gave up a really big quick drive. Appalachian State got a chip-in field goal as time expired. ESPN College Football tweeted out a really, really good vine of Frank Solich's reaction, where Nate Carpenter, who's a 6-year senior who didn't get to play in the game, popped it, photobombed it, or vine-bombed it, I guess, on accident, and they set it to some music. It was pretty good. I'd look it up. It was a tough game. They were very upset after the game. Frank, put his face on and everything, but Javon Johnson was very kind of stoic about it, and AJ Ouellette was, pretty, the most emotion I've ever seen him show for a variety of reasons with the seniors and going and everything, but it was a big bowl game. With that bowl game, it kind of leads to a question of whether this year was a success for Ohio. 8-5 isn't a bad record, but after how they played early in the year and after they probably should have beat Minnesota on the road and beating Marshall and just looking really good before some injuries set in, this team probably could have been better than 8-5. I mean, they shouldn't have lost to Buffalo. They probably should have lost to Western Michigan and stunt walker PJ Fleck. But 8-5 is probably could have been better. Probably could have won the bowl game. And we can start with whichever one wants to go. But do you consider this year a success for Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in and say that I think this year actually is a success, especially considering one of the first things I was thinking coming into this year was, do we have the offensive firepower to win some games if our defense doesn't carry us? And I'm referring to us as Ohio here, as an OU student. But the best way to look at it, I think, was that, okay, we're coming into a situation where we have, once again, a quarterback battle where it's not decided coming into the year who's going to be our starting quarterback every game. We're going to have this rotating basis that Solich has been going with since last year for J.D. Sprague and Darius Vick. And so with Vic healthy, he actually did look good at the start of the year. But even then, there was that trade-off. And when Vic did get hurt, Sprague stepped in. And he's never been anybody to blow anybody away with his arm. But his legs are good enough to run an offense that, you saw, towards the end of the season, even in the BG game, we saw Ohio run for over 300 yards. So, my buddy Carter Eckel, who's another OU student, were we went to a bar to watch the game, and it was really depressing to see them not be able to stop BG defensively, but it wasn't a surprise. And that was that point where we're like, okay, does Ohio fall apart in November like they are traditionally thought to? It didn't really happen because they went on to destroy Kent State, who admittedly doesn't have an offense, but they went on to run for over 300 yards at BG, which was an encouraging sign. They did that against Kent. They did that against Ball State, who doesn't really have the best offense. But there was a 3-game span where they ran for over 900 yards, and it was when they reprioritized the run game, the power run game, with AJ Ouellette specifically, with J.D. Sprague's legs. So I was actually really encouraged by what I saw from that, and the fact that the offense reprioritized the run game And I think that was what the biggest part of the success was towards the end of the season, especially beating NIU at NIU, which doesn't happen.
Biggest
in November. Yeah.
That's the, for me, the NIU win, even above the Marshall against beating Miami and homecoming and everything, the NIU game was the biggest win for OU in the MAC. And it's probably one of the top five wins for any team in the MAC this year, in my opinion, just because no one beats NIU in November the last few years.
Like, no, I would absolutely totally agree with you. Yeah. Like, you can't look at the bowl game and say, you know, we didn't win the bowl game after a strong finish in the regular season. You know, it was kind of a doubt, like, it kind of puts a damper on everything else that happened, you know, because every season for every team, you kind of have to look at context differently. NIU finished on a 3-game losing skid, but, you know, they were injury plagued. They were played with, they had to start their 6-string quarterback in the championship game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't consider their season a, you know, a failure. I wouldn't consider Ohio's a failure at all. Even though, like, both teams were battling injury at the time, you know, no one expected NIU to lose that game at all. You know, they started out hot. They had the 3-game losing skid, especially with, and the one thing that I really just wish would have been a lot different, you know, I didn't expect Ohio to beat Bowling Green at all, but I also didn't expect them to just get pantsed like that. Like, what was it, like 52 to like 16 or something, or 14 or something like that?
60, I believe it was 62-24. I'd have to look, but
I'm
looking closer to that.
I'm looking right now. They lost 62-24. That game was over by halftime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was, yeah, it was definitely a lot to a little. And especially for Ohio being a defensive team, you know, no one has, at least the outsiders don't have too much faith in the quarterback situations. Outside of, like, the offense outside of Sebastian Smith and AJ Ouellette, and, you know, I still never finished with the season didn't finish with me thinking that Ohio was a really good offensive team either, and that's fine. But when you have too many injuries on defense, which is for the most part unavoidable, you know, it's hard to win like that. But to still finish, you know, 8-4 in the regular season, tied for second in the MAC in the East with Akron, who had a really impressive season. I don't want to take anything away from them because I did not see them doing this good.
And Akron played OU very, very tough. That was a game where, I mean, no one was there.
A lot of people. I remember, I think it was Elton Alexander. He said that the winner of that game would determine the MAC East. And, you know, a lot of people thought that, and that's totally fine because, you know, people wanted the MAC East to be a crapshoot to start out with.
It's more fun when it is.
People wanted to see UMass do good, but Blake Fronath will suck this year. Everything else about UMass really sucked, too. You know, UMass sucked. Akron played way better than a lot of people expected them to.
That
looked like a, you know, with a strong front seven, even that, they still kind of looked like a 6-6 team because the running back situation was par. The quarterback situation, we had no idea what was going to happen, like who was going to start. Was Kyle Pohl going to be the guy? Was Tommy Woodson going to, you know, show up? Was the receiver who went from linebacker to receiver, was he actually going to do well?
Yeah.
Play Akron was surprising, but overall, Ohio's season was successful. It was kind of scary to see at first because you didn't know who was, you know, what to expect out of the offense from the start of the season. Because AJ Ouellette, he didn't, you know, show up. I don't know if that's the right phrase I want to say.
That's actually an interesting thing because there was this weird point in the season where they just stopped really kind of giving him the ball in meaningful ways because Poppy White is a very tantalizing player. And they haven't had, in my opinion, anyone that jumped out at them like that in terms of speed, in terms of being able to break big plays, since Daz Patterson was a freshman. When Daz Patterson like got playing time as a freshman behind Bo Blankenship, kind of unexpectedly, and had some really big plays. They fell in love with Poppy, and they also had some injuries with Pulling at linebacker and other guys. So AJ like played linebacker for a little bit, and it was this.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was really weird. But then you look at his last three games, his last two games, the last two games of the year, against Ball State, carries the ball 22 times for 121 yards and two touchdowns, 5.5-yard average. Against Northern Illinois, 30 carries, 140 yards, 4.7-yard average. Didn't score a touchdown, but... You know, also
he still took over that game. He was a huge reason for beating NIU like that. That was an impressive performance by him.
Yeah, when they ran him, the offense just looked a little bit more Solich-y. Like, Poppy is a really good player. I think him and AJ next year is going to be probably the two biggest, I would say like arguably the two most important people on the offense, because they're going to, Ohio loves to run the ball. They're going to dictate everything they do, and how they manage that partnership is going to be really interesting. But when they ran him with a healthy quarterback, the offense actually looked functional. Like, they need a quarterback to run, basically. When Vic couldn't run, or, you know, or JD couldn't run or whatever, they just don't look the same. They're not nearly as good. They're not nearly as functional. But it was frustrating for AJ not to get carries, I think, because I think he almost earned the carries, how well he played as a freshman, how Daz kind of is a, you know, really good player, but he's also very frustrating because he never really had, like, that game that I think a lot of people expected him to have after freshman year. I mean, I talked to Daz a lot, and he's a really nice guy, but he also just didn't have these games where he, you know, rushed for 150 yards and everything. He hadn't had one of those in a while, and probably got hurt for a while. So there's a lot of things kind of going on with that.
Yep, and I will say that I think one of the things I don't want to leave behind on this topic about where the Ohio offense can be next year is the fact that we have an offensive line that has been together for the most part.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people are graduating.
Powell, Lucas, with some of those guys, pretty much all of them graduate. So that's actually going to be interesting to see if there's any stability on the offensive line next year, and if we're going to have to mix and match like an NFL roster does, where we've got the right guard moving to left tackle and the center moving to right tackle and everybody just moving all around. So I'm actually really interested to see if there's going to be any stability at the start of next year with where our line is.
The only thing that I feel certain about saying with the line, and then we'll talk a little about the defense, Jake Cruz will probably start at center, and he'll be junior next year. He's played both years, not as much this year. You've had guys that have Stephen Langenkamp will be junior next year. He played a little bit as a freshman, didn't play this year. I think had an injury. You got Wood. You've got they got a couple guys coming back. It's going to be a different line though. I mean, Lucas Powell like really kind of solidified the line. Mike McQueen did a pretty good job at left tackle. Had a good relationship with Vic, and especially Vic. Him and Vic are very good friends. And Mike Lucas, you know, gave them really solid production inside. That's actually a really good point. The line to me, Solich usually has a lot of guys that play on the offensive line. They rotate guys in during the game. They're one of the few teams I think that do that. Like, they try to get guys reps. But yeah, that's an interesting point. With the defense, you guys can tell me I'm wrong here. They're a top three MAC defense when healthy this year. And by healthy, I mean Quentin Poling is playing and is 75% healthy enough to run around the field and tackle people.
Quentin Poling is absolutely fantastic. Like, he's a fun watch. Yeah, he's very versatile. He can get in the passing game. He's a run stopper. He's a blessing for you guys on defense. Absolutely.
The interesting thing with go ahead, Caleb.
I was just gonna say that the one thing I'd say about Poling is that to watch those two with Poling and Javon Johnson healthy as a duo, and take note off the field, those two were like the best bro. Losing Johnson this year, even though he's battled injuries all year, still going to be a tough blow in terms of who they're going to fill that spot with, whether it's Cody Grilliott or whoever. But watching those two play has actually been really exciting. And from week one, Quentin Poling was an absolute stud on the defensive side of the football. He won three or four MAC East Defensive Player of the Weeks or whatever. Absolute playmaker. Run and pass game, he tackles for loss like all the time, can make plays, just either, whether it's tipping balls over the middle or whatever, intercepting the ball. It's going to be really interesting to see if he develops into that, like, maybe top three or four or five defensive talent in the MAC.
I think looking 2 years ahead, because he is a redshirt sophomore right now, like, it'd be interesting to see if, like, okay, do we expect this guy to go drafted? Like there's so much potential, and like when you always look at young guys that do good, you always say, okay, they still have more room to grow, they're going to get better. You know, I don't know how good everyone else is going to be 2 years from now, but I expect him to be, you know, just as good, if not better, than he is now.
He was, I think, third team MAC this year. He probably should have been higher, and I want to just say that, like, as an OU student, like, I try to be impartial because that's I'm a journalist, quote unquote.
It's hard to be a fan and then
right. But he when healthy was just such a game changer for the defense. Like even at 75% when he started Bryce on and was limping around, he just did so much. He won Mac Defensive Player of the Week awards. Like he just did so much. He propped up a lot of the rest of the defense in a way. Like, and it's not saying the rest of the defense isn't good, but they were absolutely ravaged in the secondary by injuries, especially at safety. Carpenter looked really good the first few weeks, got hurt again, couldn't make it for the bowl game. Devin Bass, a pretty good corner, didn't play weeks because of shoulder, and he didn't play in the bowl game. I'm probably missing other Blake Scipio, junior safety, didn't play a lot, not the best player, but he's like a solid contributor, solid time for them at safety. Didn't play the bowl game. They talked about this a little bit leading into the bowl, but Javon and Poling in particular allowed them to never have to play nickel. If you look at Ohio, they didn't play nickel. They played nickel in the bowl game, and I was sitting next to Jason Arkley from the Athens Messenger, and he goes, "This is the first time that they've played nickel in 6 weeks." That's in the age of college football. Like they played BG in that 6 week frame.
That was BG was the only other team they did. But imagine.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if they did. I'd have to like keep a better track of it. But think about in the age of college football, where even in the MAC, when you play like Western or you play BG or even NIU, like a little bit, teams run three receivers. They run four receivers out. Ohio never has to do that with their linebackers. It's probably going to be different next year, but that's just kind of a weird. That's like a weird thing that they're able to do because of Poling and Javon and how well they move in space. Caleb, go ahead.
I was going to say about the defensive backfield as well. That is going to be another interesting spot where Ohio did rotate a lot of guys. Solich was actually pretty good about that, in my opinion, in terms of getting guys in and out, especially with the injuries. But Ohio loses Ian Wells, Devin Bass, Nathan Carpenter, all graduating. So there's going to be some spots to fill next year. It's going to be interesting because there are younger guys who have gotten reps on defense for that, but the experience is only going to come from limited snaps and snaps being a substitute. So most of those guys who are going to be out there aren't going to be guys who've started, so that might be something I'm a little bit worried about going into next year too, but I'm pretty much interested just to see where they go with that.
They do recruit well with defense. I remember your guys' last recruiting class. I can hardly remember any names, but I feel like you guys had four or five defensive backs sign on National Signing Day, and one of them, I want to ask you guys about if you know anything. I can't think of the name. He was originally committed to Georgia, and then NSD came around and then signed, but I remember I talked to Solich about him, Mac Media Day. I asked him about him, and he said, well, he has to go to junior college first, and then he'll be at Ohio, but that's the plan right now.
Well, they do that pretty well. They do with Terrell Basham, you know, best defensive end. He went to military prep school for a year, and you know, he's big enough to, and he's, like, fast enough to, like, play probably at, like, a slightly higher level. They also do a really, really good job of getting guys from, like, really small towns. That's, like, a thing they do. Chase Cochran, they're probably their best receiver, I shouldn't even say that. Over the past like 5 years or so, one of their most notable receivers, I guess, was from a very small town, like small town Ohio. AJ Ouellette is from a Division 7 high school. I'm pretty sure Poling's from Alita, which is I don't think is really big either. They go get guys from these small towns. Okay, if you actually, most interesting one, if you go look at Casey Salas, he's a sophomore defensive end, he's a team captain, he's really good, he'll be a huge part of the defense next year and the year after. If you find pictures of him when he was in high school, he is scrawny. He was a pitcher, he looks like more like a pitcher than he does like a guy who plays hybrid end and defensive tackle at the Division 1 level.
Okay, now, Bortello Colon is a pitcher.
Okay. CC Sabathia is a pitcher. Okay. He looks like a lanky, he's like a very lanky long, like he looks like your lanky long, like right-hander. Sorry, Bartolo the God. I forgot. I'm mad at my
head. Bartolo Colon's also a Silver Slugger, so they're sad.
Yeah, Bartolo Colon is the greatest sports figure of our time, and anyone who disputes that is just wrong. I mean, like, look at the guy.
I don't disagree.
It's him or A-Rod, right?
Hey, you know, We all need idols.
I'll need idols, and Barry. I mean, Barry Bonds, a hitting coach. Anyway, stop talking about baseball. You look at quarterback this year. We've talked about this a little bit. It's since Tettleton graduated, and even at the end of Tettleton's career, it's been maybe the most frustrating position for Ohio, I would argue. I mean, everything they do, they need a quarterback who can run. There's been very clear moments where I think Darius Vick was just much better, frankly. He just plays more poised. He connects better with guys. He just, you know, is better. But J.D. Sprague played really well at the end of the season. Didn't play well in the bowl game, really. But they didn't play Darius in the bowl game for reasons. But
hashtag reasons.
Hashtag reasons. It's hard to judge how they played a quarterback this year because of the injuries. Like, I can't draw this, like, big conclusion saying Darius was, like, should have been the starter all year because XXX, because he didn't play for parts of the season. And he couldn't do, even when he was in the field for parts of the year, he couldn't run because he was hurt. JD was playing well, and then he got body slammed, I think, against Marshall. And then he didn't play Marshall. I don't remember. It was, like, second or third game of the year. He missed 6 weeks with an upper body injury. I feel pretty comfortable saying Greg Windham is not good at all.
Anybody asks that of him, though. Nobody's like, Greg, come on, okay. You gotta pull us through here.
The bowl game, dude, the bowl game. They went with Greg Windham at the end of the game. He fumbled the snap, rolled right.
Twice.
He fumbled the ball twice and then had to roll right and completed a pass downfield. They got the Kwame Sawyer, who got a first down and everything, but both Sprague and Windham are redshirt seniors next year, I think. They're both going to be done. Ohio loves the two-quarterback thing. They love it. They did it when Tyler Tettleton, who was probably the best quarterback in school history, like not even close probably, at least best of the Solgera by a wide margin, was there. Like, Vic is a redshirt freshman, saw time. They're probably going to do two quarterbacks next year. Do you think it should be? So you got options. You have Max. You have Quentin Maxwell. You have there's a kid from Minnesota whose name I can't remember right now. He's a transfer. It's They're both
Connor Krzanchik.
Yeah. He went to, I think, Menor High School, which is like a pretty big D1 school in upper northeastern Ohio by Youngstown in Bo Pelini country. And then you have Windham, and then you have Sprague. Sprague will be the guy. Like, he will be the number one guy next year, barring something crazy. There's going to be a second quarterback. That's just how Ohio rolls. I tend to think it's going to be Quentin Maxwell, just because I think they're going to go with someone younger, and I think he's the guy that they recruited. I tend to think it'll probably be Quentin Maxwell and JD, but I could be totally wrong.
It just sounds like it's, like, all up in the air at this point, because there's absolutely no proven dude.
No. I mean, if you want to look at, JD, I think I don't even think he threw for. I want to say he threw under 10 touchdowns this year. Yeah, so he threw 115 pass attempts for under 1,000 yards, completed 54.8% of his passes, with a rating of 136, 7 touchdowns against 3 picks. Greg Windham threw 40 total passes for 298 yards. Completed 47.5% of his passes, threw one touchdown against 4 picks.
That's efficient.
That's just not a very encouraging. I mean, it's a relatively small sample size for both guys. Sprague's played for 2 years now. Windham, we've known about at least for a little bit, and they've both been around the program for a little bit. But you look at next year, I would argue that you maybe to maximize Ouellette, to maximize White, to maximize the last year of Sebastian Smith, who really emerged as like a really, really good receiver.
Mm-hmm.
To maximize Jordan Reed, to maximize whoever the tight end will be. I think
Was Sebastian Smith an All-MAC selection? If not, he should have been.
Yeah. He improved so much this year. Like, became...
The All-MAC selections suck. I mean, I don't want to get into that.
That's very interesting to me. Because, like,
Jeremy Guy. Don't do it.
No. Oh, come on, man. Don't do that. He's not in charge of football anyways.
Yeah.
That's not his...
You're right. He's in charge of the whole MAC. The whole thing.
Oh, come on. He's listening to this.
Totally. He's probably on this hangout. We just don't even know.
He's in this room. Look.
It's Alex's roommate.
Yeah.
I Then why aren't you breaking news? Is my question. Like, why aren't you like getting the sources, man? You'd have like the source. You'd be like, I'll make you breakfast, but you give me information. It's fair trade.
Because I'm not a good cook.
I don't cook for two. You don't cook for one. I think you need to find a guy you can develop alongside the track of particularly Ouellette and White, because you have a chance to actually like build around them a little bit, I think. And I don't know if I'm comfortable with JD. If I'm Ohio, I don't know if I'm comfortable with JD being like the undisputed guy, and I'm not sure I want him splitting a stamp with Greg. Even if Greg, you're at the point where like you have to probably give Greg a chance because he is a redshirt senior. I don't know. I would bet you Quentin Maxwell is like the guy, but spring ball's months away. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's going months away.
It's spring ball is going to be weird for Ohio, like very weird. I think there's going to be a lot of new faces, a new kicker, which is a symbolic change because Josiah Danny graduated, and you won't have a guy who really really nice. He's the most religious guy I've ever met in my life, and like not hating on him for it, but it'll probably be a very different change in the and Mitch Bonsetter's gone too, so they don't have a punter right now. They don't have a punter. Mitch Bonsetter is actually arguably the third most valuable player in Ohio. I'm just half kidding.
I just wish more teams would take the oath of never punting.
Especially, like, inside the 30, or inside the 40 on the other side. Yes. Ohio did that a bunch. Did it against Appalachian State. Not fun.
That's very Big Ten-esque.
I mean, Frank comes from Nebraska. Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, when he was there, it was Big 12, but... I don't know.
Same concept, just big football in the Midwest. I don't even know.
I mean, there's still corn, so it's all good.
There's cornfields. It's basically aesthetics. Iowa. It's basically Iowa. But you look at the team for next year to kind of head to our last thing, and I don't know how the MAC is going to be weird. Like, I expect BG to regress a little bit. I expect the MAC East in general to be kind of bad next year. Like, I just don't look at one team in there, and I'm like, that team's going to be awesome. Like, the MAC West is probably going to be a lot better again. That being said, I think Ohio has a chance to win the MAC East, but I think it depends on A, quarterback play, B, how guys who step up for Ian Wells, that corner who we didn't even talk about, steps up for Javon Johnson, steps up for Brett Layton, steps up for the guys in the offensive line like Caleb mentioned, how those guys actually perform, and we won't know that for a while, but I'm going to, just to throw a number on it, I'm going to say they go 8-5 again. But I also think there's a chance that wins the MAC East. There's like a like I really think the MAC East is gonna suck. I look at the teams in the MAC East. Miami, okay.
Dominant.
The one school in the MAC that literally student body cares less about. Yeah, just there's a lot. I have some takes. They don't go to games.
The Eastern's got you.
I was gonna say I think Avocado has some experience. With
yeah. Okay. Out of yeah. MAC East teams, no one goes to Akron games. No one goes to Akron games. I went to the Akron OU game and literally they said 20,000 people there. There was maybe 7,000. They just lied about it.
They still did better this year than they did last year. Yeah. That's for sure.
Okay.
I mean that's like when they just go by like tickets sold, but whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
It's whatever.
MAC East teams. UMass is gone. Miami. Bye. Okay. Kent. Yeah. Buffalo?
Buffalo's going to have Leopold. Leopold is... I mean, I'm just assuming that a guy who led Wisconsin-Whitewater to however many D3 championships has something either philosophically or, like, smarts-wise up there that's going to lead Buffalo to be better in the coming years. I don't know that it's next year.
Okay.
But I wouldn't call out Buffalo from reaching the top of the MAC East in a couple of years.
The dude, like, Buffalo went 5-7 this year, which is, like, more losses in one year than he's had in his whole Whitewater career. Right. Which is really funny.
Yeah.
Like, he only lost to Mount Union. Like, that's it.
Yeah, it makes sense, because, well, that means if Buffalo and Toledo meet up in the MAC Championship, the ghost of Matt Campbell. No, because Candle went to Mount Union, too. So, yeah, they're screwed.
Yeah, screwed. Akron? So, then you have Akron? I don't know if Akron went 5-3 in the conference this year. I'm not sure I see them jumping to like.
They're losing so much on defense. Yeah, though.
And that's like, that's what made them this year. So you lose all that. Then you have Ohio who finished 5-3, and then you have BG who finished 7-1. Loses their coach. Loses their record-setting quarterback. I don't see.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, they're losing their quarterback, They still have, they're still going to have a good group of receivers. Yeah. If not a good group, they're still going to have Roger Lewis.
Yeah.
And James Napke stepped in valiantly a couple years ago when MJ went down and, you know, took them to the MAC championship game. He's not like top tier MAC quarterback, which I don't really know what to define that for next year. But Napke's still good. He can still fall. He played well in the fourth quarters.
But I
really like their chances anyways.
Yeah. They're probably the favorite. They're probably the favorite, yeah. But I think there's probably some inevitable regression because of how much you lose in the coach. I mean, just a coaching change in general means change. I think on paper BG's the favorite, but I think OU could probably win that if they go 6-2. Maybe even 5-3 if things get weird. I'm all for weird though. I'd even looked at schedules for next year to see how, like, who plays who and stuff. But if OU avoids, you know, having to play like some of the better teams in the MAC West, or just play better against those teams.
Who did Ohio play in the West this year?
Western.
NIU.
Western.
Ball State.
Yeah, that was it.
Central. No, they didn't play Central. Yeah. Did they play Central?
Didn't play Toledo.
Didn't play EMU.
Didn't play Central.
Yeah, didn't play Central because you played Buffalo, Kent, Miami, Akron, BG. Western, they probably could have played better against. They probably would have lost the game even at full strength. But they got destroyed.
My parents had to suffer through that game. They went to that game with me, and that was awful.
I mean, they got to see PJ Fleck. That's like enough. That's like worth the price of admission. Row the boat.
I love talking to PJ. I really don't care what anyone says. I love talking to PJ.
No, he's gonna get a big job in the next 3 years. It's gonna be a sad day for the Mac.
I hope he stays in Kalamazoo. Like if there's that's one like this is way off topic, but. Maybe it's not because we're talking about Ohio. The one thing that I really wish we had in the MAC, money has a lot to do with it, but I just wish there was so much staying power. Like, if we can get coaches to stay for 6 years, that would be fun for me. Because I'm tired of these 3-and-out things.
Or, yeah.
You know, or if you don't prove yourself in 5, then you're fired. And it doesn't even take 5 years for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, Bowden, I think, could stay around.
Solich
will have that job until he doesn't want it. He's kind of earned that too, even if you're getting a lot of the same product every year. I think he fixed that program. He fixed the Ohio football program from being really mediocre to being like pretty dependable to compete for like the middle to the upper echelon of the MAC. I agree with that though, because I mean, and look at how many coaching changes NIU has had. But they've still remained pretty good. PJ staying around would be really fun. But
yeah, a lot of people were just so quick to say that, yeah, he's gone this year if they do well, but I just wasn't buying it. Like, why would you want to leave right now? Like, I get it, but it's not something that everyone has to do. Not everyone has to prove themselves and then pack their bags.
Well, it's also, you know, he could probably pick, like, the right job, too. Like, he's got the personality to pick, like, the job that he would actually want if he did want to move. And I think you really do. We talked about this a little bit before, but I think as a coach, you have to be really, really careful about what job you pick. Like, a power conference job has more money, you have a bigger budget, you have all those things. But if you're going to coach, like, Indiana, is that actually, like, are you setting yourself for success to go coach football at Indiana?
Or Wake Forest.
Are you setting yourself to, like, is Dino setting himself up for success to go coach at Syracuse? Is Matt Campbell setting himself up for success at Iowa State? Like, these aren't schools that are historically, like, these schools that, like, embrace football. Iowa State maybe has
Dave
a better
Dorn at NC State.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I think you'd be very careful about what job you pick. And it's also, you maybe don't have the ability to be as picky because, A, if you don't take the first job, you suck 2 years and get fired. You don't that. And B, the jobs, the really, really good college football jobs, not even the huge ones, but like a mid-level ACC school or something, like, I don't even know where I have a good example, really, but those jobs don't open, like, that often. Like, they typically have guys in them for a while. Like, something like Oklahoma State, I guess, that job doesn't open, like, that hasn't been open, like, in a while, if I'm not mistaken. Something like What's like a relatively good Big Ten school without like a big, like that's not like Michigan State, Ohio State, or Michigan. Like what's like Iowa? Like Iowa, the Iowa job doesn't open. Like Kirk Ferentz has been there forever. You know, like you have to be picky. Is it better?
For coaches that want to leave, it's like how bad do you have it really?
Yeah, exactly.
PJ has it good at Western Michigan. He has it really good. Like as much as a lot of people just get annoyed of, you know, gimmicks like family being not an anagram, but what's it called?
Acronym.
Acronym. That's the guy. Yeah, Akron. Yeah, like family being an acronym, row the boat. Like so much weird stuff. Like him doing the Harlem Shake this first year there. Like the guy's a goofball, but like he loves it there. His employers love him there. His players really love him there. The players' parents love him there. Like, and he's about to get paid. I have a feeling that he's going to sign like $1 million contract. I don't know why. It's because he's already the highest paid guy, and you know he's taken them to two straight 8-win seasons. Yeah, he didn't beat NIU, but you know they won their first ever bowl game in 3 years. You know, and people say, "Well, look at his overall record." Well, yeah, his overall record is under 500, but you throw out the first year, which was going to be crap anyways. Look at what you have now; like it's not that bad.
Yeah,
it's really good. Like Western Michigan is in a great place right now, and they have the opportunity under Fleck, with the recruiting that they have, with the great coaching staff that they have, to you know actually take over the MAC West and actually, you know, next year probably beat NIU, who, you know, a lot of NIU fans for whatever reason hate Rod Carey. But if they can just pull out a win over NIU, they don't even have to beat Toledo again. But if they just end up beating NIU, they could, you know, they could break that streak. They could end the six-year streak that NIU has, and then they could have sustained dominance if they do it, you know, the right way and all that.
Yeah, I agree with that. To kind of wrap this up, it's okay. I love PJ Fleck. Like him stunting the other day after the bowl game was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like I enjoyed that. So like I enjoyed that so much, and the people were getting like complaining about him on Twitter. I was like, just enjoy PJ. He's special. It's like when Saul Phillips at Ohio goes crazy at basketball games. It's like just enjoy it. Like it's fun. You don't get coaches at the D1 level that are unbuttoned like that, that are emotional like that. Like, it's a rarity. You should just enjoy it. I don't know. This is, again, another conversation, but people hating emotion and fun in sports is stupid. That's my whole take.
Oh, my God, Cam Newton. I just feel so bad for that guy.
I was about to bring that up, but I didn't want to get on a rant about it.
Cam.
Have fun with sports, dang it.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to put you both in the hot seat. The hot take hot seat. You're both going to make a bold prediction about Ohio football next year. That even if just something nutty, I'm gonna say this isn't even gonna be that takey. I've already said this. It'll be Quentin Maxwell and JD Sprague under center, and they're gonna finish second in the MAC East, same record as this year.
Did you just say that they were gonna win?
Yeah, I changed my mind.
Oh no, I don't know.
I said they could compete to win, but I'm also like,
can't trust him.
Oh God.
Come at me, Caleb. meet me in Temecula. What's the Temecula of Ohio, by the way?
The Temecula of Ohio?
Is it Lancaster?
I'd say Akron, but I just...
Yeah, Akron. Yeah, I'll meet you in Akron. It's like a 20-minute drive for me. 30-minute drive.
Yeah, it's in 3 hours.
Yeah, I'll meet you there. Caleb, what's your take? Give me a take.
I couldn't tell you. My guess is that Ohio really has to reprioritize the run game again. Like, that has to be the priority from day one, to use the backfield and the legs of Sprague, hopefully, to be successful. And I can see them losing maybe two games next year in MAC play and either winning or sharing the MAC East. Maybe finding a way to get the tiebreaker into the MAC championship game. Probably against Western, in my opinion. But that's just my guess. So I'm going to go with probably tying for MAC East and finding a way to slip to Detroit.
I would hope so. I would love to see that. I'm going to say Terrell Basham is first team All-MAC. and
I like that.
Joey Duckworth climbs to at least number two.
Whoa, Joey. Oh, Joey, that's a take. That last one is a take, sir. But this has been the, we'll maybe come up with a name, or maybe we should just artistically call it the Untitled Hustle Belt Podcast. I don't know.
That's a great title.
The Untitled Hustle Belt Podcast. Yeah, I can dig it. We just need some cool, like, art or something. I don't know. Maybe
it's
PJ.
Nothing like Comedy Bang Bang.
No. Comedy Bang Bang.
Can we get Kid Cudi to host this podcast is the real question.
Kid Cudi was in an episode of Comedy Bang Bang.
No, doesn't he host Comedy Bang Bang now? I thought that was a thing.
Kid Cudi?
Yeah, I thought so.
No, it's Scott Aukerman.
Is he on it, though? I thought Kid Cudi was on it.
He was in an episode.
I thought he was on, like, a lot of episodes. He tweets about it all the time.
Probably because he's just a really big fan.
I guess. I don't know.
Probably because his recent album wasn't that good, and that is not
hot. Hey, yeah, that's not hot. That Confused is really good, but yeah, I don't disagree with that. But we'll come up with something. PJ Fleck will probably be in the artwork. I would argue that. I don't know if Alex approves of that or not, but we're going to get a really good PJ Fleck icon. Do we have anyone on the staff that can graphic design, I guess, is my question.
I can a little bit.
Can you
I made the image of the tie-dye, the bowl game thing.
Can we put a crying MJ face on someone's face?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can easily do that. I don't know who.
Maybe Matt Johnson. Ah, that'd be mean. But
Bobby Hurley. Still
here, I think.
Yeah, Bobby Hurley. Dude, that's the whole. I miss Bobby Hurley. That's all
God,
I have to say.
Goldron's gonna hate us.
We will talk about Bobby Hurley another day, but I miss Bobby Hurley like so much. Like the Mac needs a guy like that because he's just such a prick. But him and Saul was the greatest on-court coaching like spat I've ever seen in my life, and that's another podcast. But make sure to follow Hustlebelt on Twitter at Hustlebelt. We have a Facebook page, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Yes.
What are you talking about? Of course we have a Facebook page.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at CDubMRight. You can find, I don't even remember, Caleb, what's your handle?
It's at Caleb_M_Carter. And then, Caleb with a K.
And Alex, your Twitter
Caleb.
Handle. Baleb Carter.
AR Alvarado 13.
So make sure to follow all those accounts, especially if you like Maction takes. And we will talk to you guys probably pretty soon. Hopefully. That'd be fun. Maybe with some different people because Caleb could come up with a hot take. So we'll talk to you guys soon.
I'm pretty bored.